The Hundred Years' War, the Sluys period, Edward III's bankruptcy. Well, we've been watching Edward III slowly sink into the financial sunset and also run out of nobles with which he could hawk. So today, he's going to finally make the big move. On December the 2nd, 1340, Sir Geoffrey Scrope and Henry Burgish, the Bishop of London, died of dysentery that they had contracted during the siege of Tournai. These two men were most associated with Edward III's Low Country schemes. Their plans had failed miserably due to poor conception and entirely foreseeable weakness of execution. Edward III's coalition disintegrated after November of 1340. The Imperial Alliance, the Holy Roman Empire, did nothing for Edward except legal sanctions for his actions. A small number of troops in 1339 and a decorated ceremonial chariot in 1340, which unfortunately had been captured by the French. Of course, the Holy Roman Empire had never received all of the promised subsidy that Edward had told them they would get, and found that his alliance with Edward III made it even harder to get his reconciliation with the Pope in Avignon. So in early 1341, the Holy Roman Emperor began withdrawing his troops. Next to go were the German princes of the Rhineland. In the Low Countries, the English alliance continued, but was very weak. Ultimately, the Low Country princes left the alliance, bit by bit, between 1343 and 1347, until only Flanders remained as an ally. But no significant English army was to fight there again until the 1380s. Edward III's three-year preoccupation with the Low Countries cost him catastrophic territorial losses. He had lost Poitou. He had lost most of the Duchy of Aquitaine that he held in 1337. Bordeaux had become a frontier city. Strategic footholds in the Agenais had fallen, and Guernsey Island was lost. But the worst losses were in Scotland. His successes in 1333 to 36 were now almost completely lost. In April of 1341, William Douglas, in a surprise move, attacked and captured Edinburgh. Then in early June 1341, King David II of Scotland returned to Scotland with his court and some French advisors as well. And of course, this ended his seven-year exile. Possibly that Edward III could recover these lost lands was limited by one thing: his bankruptcy. Edward III's two-year Low Country expedition was by far the most costly military enterprise undertaken by any medieval English king. As of May 1340, we have surviving accounts that end at this point, Edward III had spent £386,546, which was probably closer to £500,000. And that was only part of the cost of government, which Edward was constantly reminded by his officials. In the 3 years, Edward borrowed £400,000, levied taxes on a scale so great as to bring parts of England to the edge of rebellion. The financial history of the following years was a story of disorderly repayments to creditors who were too secured or too powerful to offend. So even though he's going to declare bankruptcy, there are some people he's still going to have to pay, such as the Earls of Derby and Warwick. They remained in captivity until 1341. The Great Crown of England was not redeemed from the pawn until 1345. Bartholomew Bank of Lucca was still being repaid in the 1360s. William Pole was never completely repaid, and he's the one who was really good at getting financing for Edward. The Bardi Bank loans were completely repudiated, and so that Florentine bank failed in 1346. The Peruzzi bank loans were also repudiated, and that Florentine bank failed in 1343. The only upside of this, it leads to a new rising family banking group, such as the Medici, to come in and take their place. This ended the first great age of Florentine banking, and it ended a 70-year association between English monarchs and Italian financiers. Then in England, Edward III made things even worse, provoking a brief but dangerous constitutional crisis, which all but paralyzed his government in the first 4 months of 1341. Not content to pursue the central administration as scapegoats, Edward took control of all the reins of government, using a small clique of advisors who had been with him on the continent in 1340. His instructions to his new people, it reads as follows. First of all, collect all the unpaid arrears of the 9th or the 8th authorized in 1340. In other words, the little 1/8 or 1/9 that the Parliament had said that you could collect. If it was not paid, they were to collect it. Secondly, impose it illegally on the clergy. Now, the clergy had granted their own distinct subsidy, and for the most part had paid it, but now he's going to levy more on them. Third, a vindictive and indiscriminate campaign of retribution was begun against provincial officials down to the level of bailiffs, custom officers, foresters, and even their clerks. Commissioners of trial toured the countryside, inflicting summary trials and large fines. Not only the against errant officials for laxness, but on the people at large. For this is ancient breaches of the peace. In London, there were riots on Tower Hill. Archbishop Stratford, whom Edward III had singled out as an object of special vengeance, took advantage of the intensifying discontent to launch a sustained assault on the government from his sanctuary in the Canterbury Cathedral. Stratford said, quote, "As God had punished Henry II for his persecution of Thomas à Becket by depriving him of most of his continental domains, so would Edward III suffer the loss of the rest of his territory unless he mended his ways." And the archbishop poured forth sermons and pamphlets against arbitrary power, excessive taxation, and royal favorites, carefully arousing all the emotions which had set the English political community against the crown during the crisis of the last three monarchs. The Earl of Warren removed Archbishop Stratford's enemies that were on the royal council, such as William Kilsby and Chamberlain Sir John Darcy, calling them stooges. And he told Edward III to his face, quote, "While such men as these fill the seats which belong by right to the lords of the land who can alone sustain you in your great enterprise." You know, what a mess. So let us leave poor Edward III to go over to France and see how Philip VI is doing now that Edward III is back in England and his alliance has collapsed, just like his finances. So perhaps Philip VI, you would expect him to have a better time. He's not. Now the sources for this, the Hundred Years' War by Perrois, the Hundred Years' War by Nylands, and the Hundred Years' War, Volume 1, Trial by Battle, by Sumption. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com. Ask a question, leave a comment, check out the CDs, check out the new website. And as always, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.